Hey everybody, welcome to our broadcast today. My name is Evan Evans, film composer, and to my left here is Dallas Crane.
Hey, how you guys doing?
And we got Steven Stratvert.
Hey everybody.
And Kyle Juhas.
Hello guys.
And today we're going to talk about scoring, when in the pretext of the Academy Awards. We're going to talk about the Academy Award winning, the Academy Award nominated scores. So we have this year, If Beale Street Could Talk by Nicholas Britell, Isle of Dogs by Alexander Desplat, Black Panther by, anybody know how to pronounce that name?
Ludwig Göransson?
Very good.
I apologize.
Very good. Mary Poppins, Mark Shaman.
Nordic country.
And yes. Black Klansman by, remind me again, Dallas?
Terrence Blanchard.
Thank you. So, yeah, I've been listening to these scores a lot lately. And I think one of them that was very interesting, but also very interesting for the fact that Alexander Desplat's not going to make it to the Academy Awards, was Isle of Dogs.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool story. I haven't seen the film, but as I understand it, a boy loses his dog, and it goes to an island. A Japanese boy loses his dog. It goes to an island where, for whatever reason, all the dogs speak English. Mm-hmm. And when he goes there, the dogs can't understand a word of what the boy says, which is really funny because it's the opposite of what we really intend to have. And then he's trying to search for his lost dog, and these dogs sort of have a disease, and they're relegated to the island because of that disease. It's sort of like a prison island in a way.
Kind of a trash island.
Yeah, and it's a trash island. And because it's like this prison for the dogs in a way, I think that the score, it's very relenting. It's like got this, you know, taikos and this Japanese drumming and everything. And the fact that the dogs speak English sort of makes it seem like it's a massive fish out of water for all the dogs. And then the relentless Japanese score then becomes kind of ironically funny because, you know, because it's like these dogs, it's almost like, was it Tiananmen Square or something when they played? Yeah, Tiananmen Square when they played like the music for the dictator or whatever to get them to come out. They played the same song over and over and over. It was like torture.
Right. It's funny because the way you say that, the music is the straight man for the comedy, and the dogs are the kind of funny heroes, and then the music's the straight man to play off against it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the music, it's like one tempo all the way through. To me it feels like the ceremonial music.
Yes.
From Japan, you know, you get the taikos and they just, you know, keep going, and then there's sections where you have the low voices that are chanting, which are awesome. And then what I think is really interesting, it's almost like a jazz moment where it's like the Pitts bass and the baritone saxophone, and it's just like doom 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 doom, just over and over. It's great. It's
the unrelenting aspect, and also the fact, like you mentioned, that there's like sort of a traditional music element to it. It's almost making farce of, you know, like what do 100-year-old traditions kind of do, like as a social statement. I think it's pretty brilliant of the director, you know, to be able to pull all that together.
Well, you know, Wes Anderson did it, and he's known for these highly symmetrical, you know, almost, it's like every shot is placed as if it were some dollhouse you're looking into, you know, some kind of scene. And I don't know, I think the music was either joining up with that or making fun of that, because that's exactly what the music sounds like. It's perfectly symmetrical, it's balanced.
Yes.
It's just dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, if that's what Wes Anderson were to sound like.
Right, I know. I'd be curious to see some interviews with Wes about how he feels about this movie in his whole repertoire, because I don't think he really did that with the score in any of his other movies where it was that just strict.
Like, was it Budapest Hotel?
Yeah.
It was the same pairing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot more free.
A little more free and open. I feel like Fantastic Mr. Fox, for example, was a little more like that. It was a little more kind of symmetrical. It was very kind of by, you know, almost like an actual kind of mathematical, you know, formula for it. You know, that's kind of how he is, very, very perfect. But I noticed that probably had some more similarities, I think, than any other soundtracks than from what I could hear from Isle of Dogs, where it was almost like this, you know, very set droning, like rhythmic pattern, kind of with this dramatic music, but also this, like, lends itself to this very subtle humor. And I think it's just Wes Anderson. I think really, because I think he does have a lot of input into the actual compositions. Probably not from a standpoint of like an actual composer, but just as he, I think he's just very close to that process. You can kind of get it, you know.
Yeah, so. Fantastic Mr. Fox to me feels like a movie that was made like decades ago, but I just missed out on all this time. You know,
yeah,
like James and the Giant Peach or
yes,
something
yeah.
as a movie. You know, just like a classic movie that is just so young, and then. Isle of Dogs to me feels like it's the same thing.
Well, what did you think about that score, Isle of Dogs, Steve?
Yeah, it was very like, it's kind of like, I haven't heard any other scores like it. It just kind of, I don't know if it takes itself too seriously. It's kind of like, it's just kind of fun. And it's very rhythmic. And I think it definitely stands out in that regard.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
It has like no ambition to it. You know, it's not... It's groundbreaking, but it's not trying to push the medium that it's in. You know, it kind of fills it up and just sits there.
It's funny you say that because, like, I was listening to the mastered soundtrack, and I was like, what the hell? It was almost, like, muddy.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, I mean, maybe he just wanted this to be just like, you know, you put a taiko drum out there and a couple instruments, a couple microphones, and don't touch anything. You get what you get, you know?
Right.
But, what did you think, Kyle?
Honestly, almost the same thing. I feel like Wes Anderson, whether it's developing a film or if he's working with a composer, you can kind of, it's almost like he's kind of doing a satire, but in its own regard, like, he doesn't want to be so upfront about it. Like, he kind of really wants to hold it back. It's very reserved. And I think you can see that in his scenes. You can see that a lot where he tries to, when he has a lot of kids in his movies, he kind of tries to, like, convey that not childhood innocence but that awkwardness of being a certain age and being a kid and being thrust into a situation that you're not comfortable with, and I think he really excels at that. And then I think the music and the soundtrack just plays along with that. Like, I haven't seen the film myself. I've really wanted to. I just kind of missed out on it because I'm a big fan of his work, but
those Japanese voices really are kind of unsettling.
Yeah,
but in a funny way.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, the basis of all humor is a man with problems. That's what humor
is.
You know, so the music is kind of like yelling at you for some way. You don't know why.
Exactly.
You just want to figure out, like, stop yelling at me.
You get that sense of, like, it's very dramatic, but, like, why is this so dramatic?
Yeah,
in the same regard, you're like, why does this have to be so, like, exactly, why am I getting yelled at? You know, like, it does.
Yeah.
It really has, like, the first track, you know, you hear that, really, those low chantings. And I think it just also kind of represents... I think he tried to get some, like, Japanese culture in there, even maybe from, like, a previous era where it was very, very, like, almost kind of like his films, very fit, everything's very symmetrical.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of a
part of
that.
Probably even, like, pre-Westernized.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Barry sax is interesting, but it's not played like you would expect a baritone sax.
Right.
It's very reserved, not a lot of vibrato,
just
very controlled.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that Barry sax stuff was really, really cool.
So great.
Yeah.
It's a great sound. I think
it wasn't
be.
A bass sax, no.
I don't think so. It wasn't
okay.
Quite so husky.
Quite so burly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's an interesting choice to have, like, the pizzicato bass, the sax.
Yeah.
You know, that's the European, like.
Yeah, it's
sense thing.
It's weird. It gives me some Nintendo vibes. You know, where it's like four instruments just kind of. You know, and they can't play all this crazy stuff, and so they're just stuck in a box, kind of looping around. But that's probably an association I made myself more than anything.
Yeah. Cool. I noticed Jayla says hello. Hello, Jayla.
Hello, Jayla.
Welcome to the discussion. Jonathan Parham, Martin Wasenius. Thanks. Nice to see you guys. So, what do you guys think? Anything other thoughts on that one?
I think that was my personal favorite, and you'll see why later on as
yeah,
we talk about these other scores. But it's the most unique.
Let's hold off on our favorite to the end.
Well,
now we know.
Spoiler. We'll see if I change my mind. Now you guys,
the new people who tune in, they won't know that. Spoiler alert. He loves to spoil the spoilers. But good. Yeah, yeah. At the end of this, let's all like mention which one we think, you know, ought to win and why.
Nice.
If you can.
Very nice.
Can be just a personal feeling, but
yeah.
If you have a reason why, even better.
Throw some money down.
Next, let's talk about Black Klansman. Is that how you pronounce it? Black Klansman.
Black Klansman.
So yeah, I watched this film on the way back from Miami recently on the plane. So I'm not entirely sure if they may have cut out some scenes, but they did say that they didn't edit the movie at the beginning of the thing. Right. But I'm not sure I believe it. Although, so I took pretty matter of factly some of the cuts that happened, which were really abrupt sometimes. I think I was hoping that might have been like the auteurship of Spike Lee, it could have been the fact that it was on an airplane.
Right.
Yeah, the austerity of film when you realize you're watching film. Yeah. The director makes it really obvious.
Yeah. But however, so I did think the film was trying to be something. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it.
No, I haven't seen it. No.
Okay. It felt like it was trying to be something as opposed to just being something. And I suppose, you know, that's the truth. You know, Spike Lee wanted to make like this kind of 70s throwback blaxploitation kind of movie in a way that could actually make it somehow relevant to the current discussion about, you know, the racism going on still here in America.
Yeah, kind of like, you know, take it and reshape it and modernize it.
Yeah, see, but now, yeah, I don't know that he really did that. That's the only thing. But I think, in my opinion, the score was one of the things that didn't help it combine it and make it something new
or
fresh. It was kind of your ye olde, tired, mellow, detective, noir, jazz score. Which, hey, was cool to see jazz mixed with a blaxploitation film, you know, that it's not typical, you know. You know, you try to go to, like, the 70s disco style or something, you know. So that was kind of neat, but it wasn't fresh. It was just, this has been done quite over and over. Yeah. So you got that same impression?
Yeah, it's disappointing because Terrence Blanchard is one of the top two, in my opinion, top two, like, jazz who became film composers. The other, of course, is Wynton Marsalis. Right. He doesn't do nearly enough films.
Let me just interject, Mark Isham also.
Yeah, but these guys are like New Orleans born and bred,
yeah,
you know, kinds of guys. So to hear Terrence Blanchard do this kind of score, I know he does a lot of scores, but it just sounded like he didn't really know a lot about orchestration. It was like he took a jazz group and then kind of just glued certain things that one jazz person would do onto like the string section. Uh-huh. You know, there's this like string horn octave sound that was just all the way through the score, and to me it just sounded like an anime sample, you know, just kind of this. It was a thick sound and it was sterile, and there wasn't a lot of texture in the score.
It was very minimal. I noticed that. He would add things.
If you see the film, that does work in its favor, that minimal quality, because it's trying to be almost like a resurgence of the blaxploitation film, but in a cinema verite way, which by the end of the movie, and if you haven't seen it, you know, it's unfortunately we're going to spoil it now, but it's not much of a spoiler because I think it was the talking point of what made the movie probably be nominated for Academy Awards in so many categories, was at the end of the film, they start to show real footage. It starts to, suddenly the issues that you just watched, which was set in like 1980, they fast forward like 40 years and it's the same people. They're just older now, you know, David Duke, you know, and the same issues are totally current events, you know, happening in our time. So I think if you play that up as like a big scored movie, then it would have been hard to get there.
I think a lot of, as well as with these scores in general, I think one of the things, especially this one, they tried to almost like a tongue-in-cheek kind of like, these issues, you're watching this from, you know, you realize it's from the past, and, you know, it's serious, but these issues are still going on today. I think he was trying to almost convey, like, isn't it kind of funny that we're still having these topics and these discussions? and seeing all this racism kind of come back into this country at 2019, isn't it 2018, you know, when it was released, I felt like the soundtrack almost kind of had a little bit of that too to it. I just feel like it very subtle, very tongue-in-cheek, but still had just this feeling of like kind of like almost it's hard to describe. I kind of got like a sense, like sometimes when I was watching, you know, listening to it, I felt like it was almost like music from an old, like an old military kind of recruitment video, maybe for like World War II or something like that.
Okay.
It was kind of like this, almost this triumphant kind of thing, but it just...
Or like propaganda?
Yeah, maybe a little bit of propaganda. I wasn't sure if I should use that word or not, if I should kind of do, but it did. It kind of had that feeling to it, but I don't know if it was...
Well, I think that's what Spike Lee's, like, all of his films are.
Yeah, I don't know if he was trying to make it as exaggerated and just keep it very in the background so you can kind of, you know, subconsciously pick up on it.
Yeah.
But I got that feeling, and I do. I kind of got that very tongue-in-cheek, like, this is a very serious thing, but isn't it kind of funny that this is still a very serious thing?
I heard that high string pizzicato was, like, to me sounded like, you know, supermarket music.
Mm-hmm.
He had that, a ton of it going throughout. When you say minimalism, it felt minimalistic, but it felt like ink minimalism. Like, he had not written a lot for the musicians to play, but it wasn't...
Okay.
You know, there could have been texture that would have not made it any larger than it was.
Right.
You know, so it's very still and sterile, and I think too minimal, and not minimal in the right ways. The other thing I noticed, he's a very good melodist,
yes,
right, coming from that jazz background. But there's so many points where the melody was just so overdone.
Mm.
It was just this big, long, you know, he has these weird shapes that he does, but he didn't support it anywhere, so it's just this weird kind of thing.
When you're watching the movie, those melodies do get in the way, and it almost felt like it could have been a library drop-in type track movie. You know, it's like, why did we hire this guy to score this if it's just going to be used like this, you know?
Yeah, like he's dropping his...
And then he's like, well, you have to tie in the themes, you know? You got to hire a custom composer because you got to tie in the themes. And so there's just too much theme. I think, you know, later we'll talk about If Beale Street Could Talk, and I think that score did something really, really great with jazz that unfortunately I think Black Klansman did not.
Yeah, there were a few tracks I liked. Ron's Search was one I noted because he actually had a drum groove to it, so it was funky and it was in Terrence's element, and it sounded great. He had these horns. It didn't sound like he was playing because his trumpet sounds very identifiable. So he actually had, you know, this horn section playing in the back, and it wasn't him. And then the main theme with the electric guitar was really nice because one of Terrence's identifiable qualities of his scoring is to have this like nice glowing melodic sound and then this weird texture, kind of this bitonal thing drifting through.
Yeah.
And that came in through the main theme really well and didn't really come out in any of the other tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of almost like he took out what makes film scores him.
Mm-hmm.
And he
mm-hmm.
sanitized it, I guess.
Jonathan mentions that it's based on a true character, so that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember hearing that from the previews trailer. They said that was based on a true story. So
yeah,
it was based on real characters and such. So
that's very cool. So that makes it a little bit more worthy.
I like what Dallas mentioned though. It did. It was kind of sterile. It was in a lot of ways. I feel like it's one of those soundtracks where the ideas were there, and almost like listen just like an album by a band in general where there are certain ideas in certain songs you really like, but they don't really capitalize on certain things. They kind of just like, we'll just leave it like that. And I got kind of the feeling with this. I don't know if it was a very intentional thing or they just kind of overlooked certain
some
parts.
Some overconfidence.
Maybe. Yeah, possibly overconfidence as well. Yeah, well, we can just keep that. I think that sounds great. But there was like ideas and it was like, I wish you would have, like even like I heard that like a lot of the, you know, actual electric guitar in some of those parts, it did. It was like, why didn't you maybe use it maybe a little earlier, or maybe keep kind of bring it up in certain aspects, or because I felt like it was more of a standout idea, you know, layered in those tracks.
It was a really cool idea.
Yeah,
just not enough of it.
Exactly.
Did you get a chance to listen to that score, Steven?
That was one of the ones I didn't really.
Okay.
Just heard a little speck of it, but
cool.
I didn't.
What do you think? You know, could have been done different. I mean, I watched the movie, so
yeah,
that maybe makes it a little easier.
Better
but,
idea.
But what do you think could have made it better?
I just think some more, I hate to say this, but a little more technique. Some of the, like I said, the string, horn, octave writing, just didn't have any kind of narrative feeling to me. So if he had done a little more
Just art music and not enough narrative.
It wasn't interesting from an art perspective and also from a narrative perspective. So it didn't really work in either vein. Mm-hmm. So if he had done something a little more bold narratively, that would have worked.
Okay.
Or if he had replaced those string horn octaves with something just a little more interesting.
Is it a case of just a composer just having an uninspired few months, maybe?
I think so, because he has really great work and his music is very profound and rich.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if he was just banking too much maybe on the story, or, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, also sometimes you can get it had that watered down effect quality to it. You can get that watered down effect sometimes when the director is toning you down. Maybe Terrence came in with something really swinging and live and bright, and
he can do it.
Maybe Spy said, hey, this is another one of those ones where we just want to like tone it all down and be in the background, and so he did his best to kind of bring it down. And sometimes that can be a bit of a mechanical crafted process, and you pull all the inspiration out of it.
Yeah. Now, Baby Driver was a film that perhaps had similar construction.
I would say
that had
so.
A really
yeah.
nice soundtrack, even though it was all licensed. Even just the textures that they used, they had the drum at one moment. It was like drum and bass, just kind of going through and pounding. So it had that minimalist feel, but it was still musically interesting.
It just always depends on your actual execution. I feel like it does. It just, you can have a very minimal approach, but as long as you just execute those ideas properly and in the right context, I think it you can go from a great soundtrack to kind of a blah soundtrack, kind of bland.
Yeah.
Now the next one on our list is composed by somebody that I've thought of as practically a god since City Slickers.
Okay, nice.
And I was so happy to meet him, and basically within the first month of when I moved to LA when I was 17 years old, and to me it was like meeting just one of the best composers in the industry, and that was Mark Shaiman. And he's done the score to Mary Poppins Returns.
Yes.
And I have to say, like, this, the writing in the score is just
solid.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. If we could give the score to anybody for just technical prowess, it would be that Mary Poppins.
Yeah, absolutely.
He outwrote everyone this year, I think you could probably say. I don't know if the Mary Poppins French vehicle, is what's going to get him the Academy Award here this year. But I think this is a real strong, viable contender for sure. I thought the writing was just phenomenal. There's more notes in a minute than there are probably in Black at Klansman's entire score.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's so energetic, and it has, all those wonderful harmonies that you expect from this kind of music. And he's taken the original material and expanded it and added new material. And the balance is great. It's even better than La La Land. I think La La Land had a messy quality to it.
Yeah, sloppy.
A little sloppy. And I think that's part of the narrative idea.
Yes.
But also, just comparing, this score is done by a professional who knows how to do this kind of stuff, and you just can't fake that.
It's true.
You really just have to know how to do it, and in this case, it was played well. I love the harmonies. My favorite song was Turning Turtle.
I thought it was
silly and fun, and it moved all over the place. The lyrics were good.
Oh man, the songs were incredible.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
When you approach a Disney project like that, especially one with that kind of, the original was obviously Hail is one of the most popular sort of films from that era, and it's there's such a caliber of talent that is just expected of you. I think when you approach like a project like that and you're a composer, you really do have to kind of set the bar has already been set. You kind of have to you really can't go below that. You do have to have extremely rich harmonies, extremely beautiful orchestration, very well produced. These are things that are just expected of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where if it doesn't have it, it's not going to have that Disney-esque experience to it. It's just not. You're not.
Yeah, you really had to hire a real composer.
Yes.
Somebody
yes.
who can write with pencil and
yes.
paper, and you know, I don't think there was any way you were going to get away with that on Mary Poppins Returns.
No, exactly.
It's like you can paint some clay white, but it's not going to be porcelain. You've got to really have a master to work with the porcelain.
So I think they did a great job hiring Mark Shaiman to do that.
Absolutely. But I think that was probably one of the most interesting kind of musical type scores for a while. If I remember right, The Last Showman was very bare and dry bones, whereas this one is very filled out.
Right, yeah. Was it, to me, like, The Greatest Showman?
Yeah.
The Greatest Showman and La La Land were kind of similar in that they were just doing sort of pop arrangements.
Yeah, it was like the layman's musical where they didn't have necessarily great talent, and so the orchestra kind of was focused around that,
right,
just making a chill kind of approachable vibe. Yeah. Relatable.
It reminds me of like that old show on TV called Fame, you know, that people just had different talents and they had, you know, dancers or singers or whatever. Right. And it's just sort of like a talent show that's different than, you know, Mary Poppins Returns, where you've got to write a real score and, you know, real masterful. I mean, if you listen to that score, it's extremely well orchestrated. You can hear everything from top to bottom.
Super clear balance.
Mark Shaiman is probably one of the underrated masters of our time. You could definitely learn that from Mary Poppins Returns.
Yeah. Now, what do you guys think? Was the score groundbreaking at all? Because I think it was very well done, but
I don't know if I would say groundbreaking. I mean, that was one of those things where it's like, does it have to be? You know, it's kind of like, does it have to be ground? Because you're it's almost kind of what we mentioned before in previous podcasts, where it's that experience. You're going for that experience. You're going for that actual, you know, musicality of it. And I think for those types of soundtracks, it's you really have to have a great bridge between those, because people are expecting these huge harmonies, these huge sing-alongs. You know, they want to hear that when it comes, you know, have things really just kind of come down into a very nice dynamic range. And people kind of, you know, I feel like if you try to go a little bit outside of that, they're going to pick up on that immediately. Even someone who's not maybe accustomed to Mary Poppins, but has seen a bunch of Disney films from their childhood, is going to be like, this sounds off in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know if I'd call it groundbreaking, because you do have to kind of pander a little bit, because people are expecting this is from a movie from 50, 60 years ago.
Right, yeah.
So how outside of the box can we go with this? But, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that, but I do think, again, isn't discredited for being a well-written, well-produced piece at all.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
it's definitely a standout in the Disney era. You know, like a Michael Giacchino score has a specific flavor to it, but this one is very historically informed and accurate and energetic and filled out. And there's, you can tell there's no holding back because of some, you know, technical limitation, you know, lack of knowledge or time or anything like that.
What do you think, Steve?
I mean, I'm personally, this is just my opinion, but I think Emily Blunt, I think she was the main character, she was Mary Poppins. I don't think she captured the same authenticity as the
Julie
original Julia. Yeah, there
was
a huge, Julie Andrews or one. I'm just blanking out. But I don't, from what I remember, she just didn't capture that vibrancy, I think, in her voice. And that's probably because she's not a trained Broadway singer. Yeah,
right. No,
so
yeah,
it
would have
been nice to have someone.
Yeah, but however, I must say that the nomination is for the score not for the songs. But no, I mean, you bring up a good point about some of the, maybe, you know, problems that the movie itself has as an entire vehicle with all the talent involved and everything. It's maybe, it has a few things that it maybe fell short of, but I didn't see it. But I heard that it had Dick Van Dyke comes back.
I like how you mentioned a vibrancy, because with all these scores, I get the sense that in 2018 the sound was brightness, a glimmer, you know, kind of that upper register, you know, balance everything higher up, not a lot of lows. Everything was very bright,
that
shimmery.
Yeah,
that to me sounds like the 2018 sound. You get that of, you know, with Black Klansman and the high pizzicatos, that kind of supermarket vibe. With Mary Poppins, obviously very shimmery and glowy. With Isle of Dogs as well.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then, you know, with the others.
Absolutely. Looks like we've got also Mark Street here. Hey, Mark, how you doing? Thanks for joining today. And earlier, Jonathan Parnham said he always likes Terrence Blanchard. You have to respect him. in this day and age to have a recording contract, yeah, and still score theatrically released films, and the movie was good. Yeah,
oh,
that's
yeah,
a good point.
He's a master, for sure.
And that kind of brings me to the next one that I'd like to talk about, which is If Beale Street Could Talk. So this is a film that I didn't see, but I think I got a really good impression of it from the music. And I think that's because the music score is really, really good. I think it's communicating a lot of narrative. One of the interesting things that I found about it was this approach to take jazz and give it this whole like ambient approach, which to me kind of communicated the narrative of... So I started to put a few things together just from the title of the film and the title of the tracks and the way the music seemed to be presented. I don't know if this is what the film is about, and I'd rather not know what the film is about before I go and see it, because that's just the way I am. But my impression is, like, the first track is called Harlem, and the movie's called If Beale Street Could Talk, so I'm guessing Beale Street is a street in Harlem. And then I'm hearing in this music almost the history of the sound of Harlem in that music,
echoing
the like as if the bricks could talk. I mean, and it just literally says If Beale Street Could Talk, you know. So I don't know if that has anything to do with the direction on the score, but that was the impression I got, that this music really would represent sort of the echoes of the history of Harlem and the the streets. And it also, I remember there was a quality to it that was real frail, real fragile. And almost, but also sort of like a dirge, like a funeral dirge, and yet fragile. Yeah. So I'm not sure, maybe it's possibly about the deaths of some people, or somebody is dying who is old and fragile. I'm not sure, but there was certainly really, really good communication on the part of the composer, narratively in the music, to be able to communicate all these things well. It also had like a nursery rhyme quality to it. So I don't know if you noticed that, but it had this like nursery rhyme.
Yeah,
quality.
I mean, it was very bright, shimmery. I would say breathy as well. My favorite track actually was Agape. I assume it's not Agape, but
I know, I'm not sure.
That's what I thought.
I thought
like,
it was
Agape.
Okay, so I'm not the only one. That's weird.
No, you're not the only one. I called it Agape in my mind.
Okay, but yeah, that was my favorite because it was like, wait, did Terrence Blanchard do this one instead? And they just kind of swapped their names. Because it was the trumpet solo was kind of coming out, and they were aleatoric. First the trumpet, and then the piccolo trumpet. Man, piccolo trumpet is underutilized. That was such a nice sound.
Yeah, that just took me all the way back to The Good, Bad, and the Ugly when I was hearing that in there.
It was like a toy piano, but brass. Mm-hmm. And
I got that feeling from this that it was almost like a more of a modern take on like a soundtrack from maybe 60s, early 70s, not later on, but it had almost this kind of ambient atmospheric quality, but it was still very up close and intimate. And I didn't get that feeling like I was, you know, drifting from something. I felt like I was always being kind of brought in.
Yeah, very small group.
Yeah, exactly. Into a very small kind of just kind of closed sort of just area, and it really does kind of rope you in, instead of kind of like it's just kind of, you know, maybe making you feel like you're a little more outside looking in.
Right.
So
what I thought was interesting too was like at one point he was doing this A minor thing, and I was like, whoa, it was kind of like had a Baroque quality, like, you know, like perhaps like one of these liturgical, like, I don't know, in the church, but it was like reminded me of that. So I wonder how that got into there, but it was very, very kind of cool. Maybe it had something to do with it.
You're totally right. I totally heard that. That dirge quality I was talking about had that. It was like he has a couple of counterpoint lines that just are very traditional, and it was amazing to see something so fresh done with such traditional, you know, counterpoint. Really, really was cool. Also, at times, it reminded me of the score to Nocturnal Animals. Did you guys listen to that score at all?
No.
Where it has this, like, repeating, fragile quality. That movie has to do with... Well, I mean, that's pretty deep. So, but there's... and I know if I say anything about Nocturnal Animals, I'll give it away, you know, spoil. So, if you haven't seen Nocturnal Animals, by the way, see that movie. That's incredible. Okay. But, you know, like Philip Glass does with, like, Koyaanisqatsi or any of his movie scores, where you have that repeating element, and it just keeps He's like, okay, it's that context thing we talked about, like about the thing, remember?
Yes.
It's like the atmosphere, you know, the context of this has to be always sort of present, omnipresent,
right,
always.
Because
this story, I guess, takes place under these conditions, right? And so I think, you know, that's part of why he did a really good job, Nicholas Britell, of, you know, repeating. This is the same guy that did the score to Moonlight, right?
I believe so.
And that was the one that I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it did win the Best Picture Award.
Yeah,
it didn't, and then it did, you know. So I still have to see that movie, but now I'm hooked. I mean, Nicholas Britell did a really, really beautiful job on this score. I think I really love it a lot.
Now, my favorite track from If Beale Street Could Talk was Miss Victoria Rogers, actually.
Oh, yeah, I like that one.
It had this moment with this really weird, wild vibrato.
Right.
That to me, if you're familiar with Vaporwave, just kind of brought in that aesthetic, like this false nostalgia is the idea. You know, and you have this clock rhythm, and then just this vibrato, there's like, really, really wide.
Yeah.
To an effect.
Yeah.
It was great.
Who's that trumpet player? He was like around in this late 70s. He kind of feel good.
Chuck Mangione.
Yeah,
that's
what I thought when I was hearing the score. There was one part I was like, oh, Chuck Mangione.
Yeah, Chuck Mangione is really wonderful and probably highly, I don't know, underrated. Like they deliberately underrate him. You know, because it can be kind of elevator music in a way.
Right.
But it's not. He's really a fantastic composer. I love everything by Chuck
Mangione. Yeah, the Tenth Commandment. What's that Spanish tinge song that he always does? The dun da da dun 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 da 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 It's not the Tenth Commandment or anything. It's Children of Sanchez. That's it.
Oh, yes.
I win. Yeah, that high flugelhorn sounds so hard to get.
That Britell, in an interview on Film Music Media, says he worked very closely with the director. The director asked for brass, and also this is their second collaboration after Moonlight. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And let's see.
A lot of comments.
Yeah, definitely. Anthony Dressler on YouTube says this right now is legendary.
Love it.
Thank you very much, sir. And Gabe Martinez giving us some good props.
Nice.
Thanks, Gabe.
Yes.
Thanks, Gabe.
So the next score that I want to talk about. Final score.
Well, hold on.
What is it?
Before we talk about that, do you guys have any? What about like honorable mentions?
Honorable
like
mentions.
Scores that should have been here but never made it.
Man. Well, sure. Let's go over the last one and then let's go there and then let's pick our favorite to win. How's that?
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Yeah. I don't run awards shows. So I don't know the order.
That's funny.
Don't hire me. Don't make me.
So now we
Oscars.
Get to Black No, just kidding. It's Black Panther.
Black Panther.
Black Panther. No, Black Panther, and it's by this guy, I think, who came out of the DJ world or something. Is that right? Kyle, what's his name again? Ludwig Göransson or something?
Yeah, Ludwig Göransson, yeah, correct.
Yeah. Now, I heard that he did a lot of research on the score and went into the field. I don't know if that's true, if he went to, I believe, Africa, and he recorded things authentically over in Africa.
Yeah.
And then incorporated into the score. I think the score is monumental in its like achievement of production quality.
Oh,
it's got just I don't know how many tracks there. It could be 1,000 tracks.
I see it.
So much work went into this score, and he's got you know African instruments playing African tribal type of drummings and chantings.
Yeah.
Over on top of a massive, full blockbuster-sized orchestra, which is probably 150 to 200 pieces when you include the choir.
Big choir.
So massive, and it probably was a very big team. So there's a lot of work that went into it, but in the end, I felt that it was pretty much just a straightforward treatment of how you would just score a movie. You know, it's got this quality where you want to bring elements in from Africa, and so he did, and those were straightforward. And then you have the heroic material, which is this three-note motif, which then he modulates, you know, up a fourth or a third, I think, and it's not even extended. It's not even an extended melody. It's just a three-note motif that repeats again, and then he uses that in different forms, and it keeps getting uplifting and uplifting and more uplifting, and then he cuts off as this constant build to the cliffhanger and end, and he keeps using the same formulaic structure like that over and over for every cue, and he keeps building, and then it brings in the little heroic element, and dun 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 dun, and then vroom, and now we're back into the next scene, and it's just I think that for me it was nothing revolutionary. Except for the fact that I think that it was extremely well done as far as production quality goes.
Yeah,
I just don't know about, as a composer, if I could give is Ludwig is his name? Did you look up?
Yeah, Ludwig.
Now?
Yes.
Yeah, if I could give Ludwig full props on this, say like the Academy Award, but certainly
it's no Van Beethoven.
But certainly it's probably a great score, a hell of a soundtrack, really exciting. Which you could say about, like, you know, any Marvel movie. I just, you know, not quite sure if I would give it the Academy Award status.
I think there's a certain by the numbers, you even mentioned, to kind of approach when it comes to the Marvel movies nowadays, where they'll try to fit in themes that are essential just to that character, but overall they're still trying to convey this very big, very like three note heroic kind of thing, no matter what it is, whether you're Thor or Captain America or, you know, or Black Panther. But I think, in the same regard, I think Black Panther, obviously he's a much different character. He comes from a whole different world from these guys, even, you know, he's in, like, as opposed to, like, Thor. And I think, kind of the same regard, where it was a great mixture of trying to add these African instruments into this kind of mix, but even what Evan mentioned previously, where it's like African instruments playing already African music, it's kind of like there isn't too much you can do with that. You really can't go outside the box with that, you know? And groundbreaking, I wouldn't call it that, but still in the same regard, like, when it does fit, because I did see the film, when it does fit with the film, it does fit very well. You could tell they really paid a lot of attention to that type of aspect, and you're getting those big dramatic moments. You're getting that feeling, oh, we're back in Wakanda. You know, we're back at the, you know, okay, we're back. You know, so all these different cues and such, they really put a lot of time and effort into that, and you can absolutely hear it, especially with just the size of
yeah.
the production itself, the orchestra.
Craftsmanship-wise, top-notch. 10.0.
Yeah. It's what you expect when you go to see a Marvel film, I feel
yeah.
like that in a lot of regards.
It's like the Weta Workshops of music.
Yes.
Right.
You know, they
yeah.
have the money, and they you know they're just going to make something fantastic. It might not be memorable, but it's going to be top notch.
It's going to fit.
I like the talking drums, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, go, 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 go.
Yeah, great. Yes.
That's also present on one of my favorite jazz albums, Taranga by John Faddis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, you know, beloved sound. I think that's cool. You know, I don't know if you guys watch Chopped, but one of the biggest criticisms that chefs get, Chopped is a Food Network channel where they're given 4 special ingredients and they have to make dishes.
Yeah.
One of the biggest criticisms the contestants get is that they didn't incorporate the new ingredients into the dish, that they just kind of put it on top.
Just put it on there, yeah.
And I felt like with a lot of the African stuff, that's what it was. It was like, all right, we're going to, you know, pan the camera over in pure, you know, African ethnic drum grooves and then pan back to orchestra.
Mm.
And I didn't feel like the two elements, even if they were superimposed, they didn't really interact in a way that felt like the material had been digested and then analyzed and then synthesized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just felt very raw at
mm-hmm.
at the moment. And I
mm-hmm.
think if there had been a little more compositional stewing going
yeah.
on, we would have had something better.
I think, you know, it's tough for us because we're composers. And so probably to 99% of the world, this score was as phenomenal as Mary Poppins. You know, it was balls to the wall, top to bottom, left to right. You know, every note on the score written just like fantastically. And but, you know, for us as composers, it was kind of a pat presentation. It was really, it's nothing new.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to Mary Poppins because it's well done, but it's just, it's, you know, it is what it is. I did like the low digital beats that they had going on, the kind of blasty low synths.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the variety of sounds were great.
Yeah, it was, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but just combining them, it they didn't feel necessarily cohesive.
I feel I felt the same way. I feel like they like wrote all those, like, you know, say like the more like tribal aspects and the more like they wrote them completely separate, and then
yeah.
exactly they were just like, okay, there you go, you
trying
know,
to
let's
merge.
Yeah, let's just merge them in. Don't, you know, don't have this lead into this, you know, which they could have very well done.
Like, could
you know?
Could you imagine having like a talking drum rhythm, you know, like some kind of because there's some really cool like 6/8 grooves going on. And then the drums like turn into a digital sound.
Exactly.
Just like with as much money as they had, they could have a drum sound that becomes a digital synth beat and it keeps going, you know? You know how they fly through the force fields?
Yeah.
Imagine that with music.
That would,
like there's so much creativity they could have done with
yeah.
that huge palette, but to me it like paint by numbers. It was like a single color and then a single color.
Exactly.
Not much blending, not much nuance shaping.
Very true. One thing that's for sure is this year we have a lot of variety of types of composers.
Yes.
Right.
You know?
And, very true.
Maybe the John Williams and Ennio Morricone aren't in there, you know? And so we've got a very interesting mix of styles of and approaches and composers and thinking and ideating. And I think if anything, that's exciting. So moving forward, you know, there's quite a bit of talent there, some young, some new and fresh, and it's going to be interesting to see where they go for the next 50 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So along that line, I wonder which is your favorite, each of yours, except first, let's talk for a moment about were there any scores this year, in the past year, any movies which had some scores which you thought ought to be up there.
Ooh. Oh man, I'll have to think about this one for at least
a minute. I probably should ask you guys beforehand.
Yeah.
No, it's good. Like
but if you have a few, great, go for it.
Well, I've got to think of some myself as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think Avengers Infinity War was a really great movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that when that happens to me, when I enjoy a movie... at that level, which I thought Avengers Infinity War was a much better movie than even Black Panther.
Oh, what about Solo?
And Solo, my God. I think it got like disqualified.
Well, they forgot to.
No, they forgot to submit it.
I remember hearing that.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
It's been intense. Oh, crap.
John.
Yeah, that was actually a really fun one.
You need to hire Dallas as your assistant there, John.
Yeah. Actually, now that I think about it, Solo was really interesting. John Powell has a really different approach to large orchestra, but not any less busy or intricate than John Williams.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, he has a really I think he's bright, whereas John Williams can get dark.
Mm.
And so to hear Solo, you know, he put so much heart into that score. It really shows. And he managed to use the old material well, and he added new material, and he blended it together.
I felt the same way.
That was a really fun one.
Such a huge fan, obviously, huge Star Wars fan. I felt kind of the same way. It was a great, even much like better odes and nods to some of the previous work that John Williams did, as say maybe compared to like
Rogue One
or I think Episode 7. The name is escaping me right now.
Force Awakens.
Yes, Force Awakens. When that came out, when that first trailer came out, and they were using the a reprise, and it was a much more downplayed version, but it was from Empire Strikes Back. That theme that plays kind of with Han and Leia when they're in the Millennium Falcon and they're escaping from the TIE Fighters to, I think, some meteor, and they get the giant worm thing. But that is probably one of my favorite pieces of music that he ever wrote for that series, because it's just so intimate, it's so close, it encapsulates the sci-fi story with this kind of love story now and all these elements. And I thought it was going to be a big part of The Force Awakens, and it wasn't. And I remember being in the theater being like, when is that going to come up? Like, and they very, very subtly played it, and they kind of just cut it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Solo did a much better job of that, of kind of doing these old reprises, but then at the same time adding so much more to them.
Yeah, there are two standout moments in the score for me. One was the Enfys Nest cue, which had this strange, you know, Eastern European female choir.
Yes.
Which was just awesome. It almost sounds like the Japanese choir for Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
It's like,
nice.
Very nasal.
Yeah.
That was a really cool sound, and
really
to hear it in Star Wars. Felt very natural. I think he could have pushed that even further. He could have made it more biting, more dissonant, and kind of weird. There's a lot of weird music in Star Wars. And then the other moment was the added like synth drums, kind of heavy drums during the train sequence.
Yes.
Which would normally be just a regular, you know, play it by ear, chase music, Hollywood style. And then he has his massive drums on the bottom of it. It actually worked really well.
Yeah, they had the Bulgarian choir on
it
top.
Did.
Of the,
yeah, the choir was coming in and out as the speeder bike was flying in.
Yeah, that was incredible. Yeah, that's a real shame that wasn't nominated.
It is.
Because, frankly, I think it would have made it this far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely bright as well. It checks all the boxes for what I think allowed these five scores to make it.
Yeah. So now I don't know if I really have figured out which one is my favorite score, but I'm going to do it right now. Now, when I compare all these, I basically think that I'm going to choose, yes, If Beale Street Could Talk. So that's my vote for that. If Beale Street Could Talk, I think, was the best score of the year. I think it used the medium of music to communicate narrative in a way that's worthy of an Academy Award. I think it did an excellent job of doing so. And how about you, Dallas?
Like I said, Isle of Dogs was my favorite.
Really?
Surprise. It was rock solid and perfectly fitted to the film. And I think giving it best score will send the message that there's not some universal, objective, better way to do a score, that, you know, you have all these tools at your disposal and you can go down all these different paths. And the best path is what's dictated by art and great taste. And I think I Love Dogs was that one for me.
For me, it was kind of like a toss-up between I Love Dogs and If Beale Street Could Talk. And I think... I just think, for me, it was If Beale Street Could Talk. I think that was, had a slight edge in the fact that it was just, for me, it was more of like the story. It told the story maybe a little better, although it was pretty damn close between those two for me. And I like the narrative choices in Beale Street Could Talk from maybe a more compositional, maybe that's a style that I feel more drawn to, as opposed to Isle of Dogs, more...
That
maybe
sort of...
went a little more abstract. I don't know if that maybe tried to be something a little more cutting edge. I think maybe that went over Beale Street Could Talk in terms of cutting edge, I think. But I don't know. Yeah, so
nice.
That's my verdict, yeah.
Oh, really?
I'm probably going to go with, I think, Isle of Dogs as well. It's because I like when you can hear something that really does kind of stand out. I mean, I'm a little biased. I do enjoy Wes Anderson's approach in his filmmaking, but I like the fact that you can also tell he does have a lot of influence. You can just hear it in his soundtracks. They're all a little different, but he does really bring forth this almost melancholy quality, but he brings it in this way where it paints it very beautifully, and I kind of got that with the soundtrack. I also got, like, some differences where, like, almost like a very oppressive, like, militaristic style with the drums and the chanting and this kind of, you know, the society where they've shunned all these dogs, quarantined them to this island, and you kind of get this feeling like, you know, you are kind of this kid where you're like, well, I know my dog's sick, but he's on his island, but I want my dog back. You know, it fit, like what Dallas said, it just fit the movie very well. And I think when you have that, you get that kind of that masterpiece in a way. I haven't seen the film yet. I really want to, but...
It's a hard one to see.
Yeah.
It's limited release.
It wasn't released.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that okay. Well, that's, yeah, that makes sense now.
Anyway.
But no, it from what I heard from the soundtrack, it flowed very well. And it gave me that feeling, too, where it painted the scenes for me. And even without seeing it, I could still kind of get the intro. I got the middle. I could kind of put together almost my own sort of version of that story. So
yeah.
But, yeah.
So there you have it. It seems like we have a semi-split vote, but
yeah,
maybe 0.5 leaning towards Isle of Dogs for Andrew Desplat, but Alexandre Desplat. But he's not even going to be able to come to the Academy Awards. And,
oh, that's a shame.
And I think he may have won our little vote. Our little vote here.
Yeah.
We're sending those vibes
to
him.
Way to go, Alexander. I think maybe you should get on a plane. I think this might be a really close call. But yeah, I think if we went with our final decisions, we have kind of a split vote between If Beale Street Could Talk and by Nicholas Britell, Good Luck Tomorrow, and Isle of Dogs, Alexandre Desplat. Good luck, everyone, all of the composers.
Yes.
It's going to be a very interesting show, and I look forward to seeing who takes home the Oscar.
Yes.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and see you next
all
week.
Right.
Thanks, guys.